Welcome to Star for the Universe Encore. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SW Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just call 605-562-0444. This follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702, or just look for Starfleet Universe on call when it comes to the latest upcoming streams. And of course, you want the best online experience. What you want to do, you want to go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you will find this there. You'll be able to join the chat room and watch the video stream live. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, I also have an account there. That's going to be sfuoncall. Also, my personal account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And of course, my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. Of course, there's no T in that. And of course, if you want to find me on Blue Sky, you can find me there too. My podcasting account is sfuoncall.bsky.social. And of course, my personal / business account is the franzgames.com account. Moving on forward to the news for this week. Steve Petrick update. He has been in the VA hospital for over a week. They're starting a dialysis treatment. Obviously, I think that means he's having problems with his kidney, if I recall correctly. I forget what dialysis is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's kidney because that's flushing that. And Steve Cole has been busy for the past 10 days working on a joint venture deal and also new products. Moving onward to the found on online store this week, we have a Battle Force deck. You know, you love Starfleet Battle Force so much. You play it so much that the cards have started to deteriorate. Let's say it that way. Fall apart, crumbly. You know, you actually can tell which card it is from not even looking at the front of the card, by looking at the back of the card. You know those situations. Well, for only $15, you can get a replacement deck for Starfleet Battle Force, and you'll be all set to go. Heck, buy at least just one replacement card deck, keep it in the package, just put it aside, and you'll be good. You know, you'll have that backup copy just in case someone spills a drink on your deck of cards because they're having to be drinking beer that night, and that's maybe the only way you could win that night. They're having those nights, you know. So, moving on forward to the SFB Online tournaments, of course, Sapphire Stars 19 tournament signups are still open. Also, when it comes to the 500 BPV tournament, me and Justin are trying to get together. Last weekend didn't work out. Some appointment came up that he couldn't avoid. So, pushed it. And I'm going to see if I can remember to send him out an email. I've been very busy this week, so I haven't had a chance to actually send out an email to him and respond to him. So I'll be doing that hopefully later tonight, maybe as late as tomorrow morning. And hopefully we can get together maybe on Saturday, which would be good. Possibly on Sunday. Don't know. But anyhow, moving onward and forward, when it comes to online client, obviously I released the 4.80. This one's the magnifique. I got to think about it. I know I have to write up a big paper about when you should update, how you should update, and all that kind of thing, depending upon what version that you're currently running and all this kind of things. Somebody did something which I didn't expect, which was somebody installed the latest version. They installed, I think it was 4.73. Then they went into the client and went, update. My update's not that smart. I'll put it that way. I'll be honest. And unfortunately, since the version number that was on the server didn't match the version number that was local, it downloaded that version. What happened? Da-da-da-da-da. He reverted back to the older version. So in theory, he's got the proper installer, because the issue is that the installer has a certain launcher. Those parameters have changed. So it depends upon what installer you have used. So I have to go through the whole rigmarole to explain which one is which. I'm trying to have it so that people don't have to update. Obviously, if you're concerned, the best way to update, find the user info.properties file, back that up, uninstall it, log in, and then so you can recreate the user info.properties file, and quit, and then take the one that you backed up and just overwrite where the previous one was, and boom, you're good to go. You've lost no settings whatsoever. But moving on forward with the library report, I've actually have a backlog of library items to upload to the SWB library. Forgive me, especially it's the Tholian R4T. I got to check to see whether I need to create counters for that. I think Frank mentioned he might have some counters for that. But other than that, nothing's been updated. I know I have to also update the general units also. When it comes to FedCom library, no progress there. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one of all powerful friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we have me. That's it for tonight when it comes to y'all. Just coming up the screen manager, whatever. I don't care. Oh, don't mind me. It's dealing with Twitch. Mm-hmm. Only time I ever deal with the actual app is when I'm online. Mm-hmm. I probably should do a little work on that and find out what exactly I should be doing. Of course, there's probably no documentation because this is the world of the internet where you're supposed to figure out how the application works by playing with it. Not that it's actually documented someplace.
Sounds pretty traditional, actually. Yeah.
So. My dear friend, I grew up and started working when you actually had documentation. You got the nice manuals of, okay, this is how the product works.
Yeah, manuals are nice, but, it's like it's sitting over there gathering dust most of the time anyways.
Well, at the same time, you need those manuals.
That's what you go to when you can't figure it out any other way.
Yep, especially when we're talking about business applications. I still remember, if I recall correctly, when I was working for my first full time gig after college, the Primavera Systems, every single person got one copy of the manuals. Now, they got it at one point and never got another update, but we had that on our shelves. But I think that was correct. I know actually one time I had, and this is many, many years ago, holy cow. I forget what version of Oracle database it was. It was like version 1 or 2. Basically, we had all the diskettes that you're installing on your hard drive. You have a pile of like 9 diskettes that you had to keep them. Oh, next one. Installed this number 3. Installed this number 4. Installed this number 5. Back in the good old days.
Yep. So I learned a couple things in Eve that you might want to know about later.
Okay, cool.
Especially since I know you like to do exploration stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was puttering around doing some exploration stuff because there's blueprints you can only get out in Nullsec.
Uh-huh.
And very specifically, only in like a couple of systems in Nullsec.
Oh.
And I think the it's like NPC stations are very rare in Nullsec.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can go out there and you can be the, if you want to, you can go out there and be a pirate faction guy.
Mm-hmm.
To try to grind all the faction and everything to get some pirate BPs and stuff. And but that's not what I was looking for. I'm looking for some specific BPs. And to get out there, I figured out that I can do one of two things. I can go X dozen jumps through very dangerous Nullsec that's camped, because that's where those things are and people know that.
Yeah.
Or I can go and try to jump through Thera. I think it's called Thera.
Mm-hmm.
There's one system in the wormhole space systems.
Oh, J-Space, like, yeah.
Yeah, you know how those are all connected and the connections keep changing all the time?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure you're quite aware of that. And, there's one system that has an actual NPC station in it for the Sisters of Eve faction.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That one is highly camped.
Big surprise.
But, yeah, big surprise there. But it has at least four static wormhole connections out to HiSec all the time. So when those go away, it's going to be replaced by another one that's the HiSec somewhere. And there's a faction of people, or a group of players, actually, that map where those are, what systems they're going to, and what the name of the wormhole is on both sides.
Right.
Now, the thing is, that particular system, it also has constant connections out to all the different Nullsec spaces and wormhole spaces and Lowsec. So basically, that system has like dozens of wormholes going out all over the place, and they're constantly changing. So what I'm looking at is, I can check on the webpage for that group, that player group.
Mm-hmm.
And it says if it has a connection to the constellation or even the system where those stations are. So I could go out there and try to get out there and be like two jumps away or right into the system. If I just go either into Thera and then to that wormhole, out into the outer ring.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these stations are out in outer ring, and they're really like on the edge of the map for Eve. So the other possibility is that I'll get lucky and I'll just find a wormhole right out to that region or system, which is like, you know, a one in so many thousands of chances.
Yeah, understood.
Now, that being said, I still haven't done it yet. But while I was doing this, I found like three different Pochfin wormholes. Pochfin is the Triglavian space that is very similar to wormhole space, where they had the Trig invasion a few years back.
Oh, okay.
And do you remember that?
I remember hearing about that, yeah.
Okay, well, basically, part of the Trig invasion thing was that that faction literally swiped systems from Eve and took away the gates and then reconnected those systems with their own gates. So I learned two things that you need to know. If you find yourself, actually three things you need to know if you find yourself out there, and then we'll get back to your regularly scheduled podcast. The first thing that you need to know is, there are players in there, but the local system works like wormhole space. You don't show up in local unless you say something. So there's that. The next thing you need to know is that you can go through some gates, but not others. You have to get standings with the trigs to activate certain gates.
Okay.
Now, the way it's connected in threes. They have a thing with threes. And the deeper you go into their thing, then the more access you can get and do stuff. You can dock at the stations, because those are stations that were left over from when they stole the systems. But they're all faction stations. So you don't get to see the agents until you get your faction raised.
Right.
You can only raise your faction by killing rogue drones. But if you fight the Trigs, you trash your standings. You don't want to do that.
Right, understood.
And all the stuff in there is incredibly dangerous. Now, the next important thing you need to know is you cannot jump clone there. I thought, well, what the heck? I'm in this space now. I'll just put a clone out here and, you know, park my ship, put a clone here. No, it won't let you jump clone to regular space. I looked it up. If you get your standings up, and you have to get your standings up to like a ridiculous amount compared to like starting,
right,
just to put clones in their stations, you can do it within their trig space to move around locally there, but you can't do it in and out. Hmm. So if you decide to go in there, you can park stuff in there. But you cannot use their fitting service in the stations.
Okay.
So if you decide to take a hauler full of small unfitted ships and stuff, you can't do anything with them in the station. If you run a few ships in there and a bunch of modules in there, you can't change your fitting, but you can use a mobile depot out in regular space at a safe somewhere to change your fittings.
Right.
Oh, and also, it's kind of like null space. Everybody will kill you if they don't know you and you're not part of their corp. So that was just a couple things. I thought I'd throw that out there, because that was my Eve experience like last night.
Mm-hmm.
Like running around in that space, and you know, it's like, okay, I jumped into the space and I said, hey, there's a gate over there. Let's go look and see. Like, I went and docked up once, couldn't find an agent, couldn't do anything. And then said, okay, I'll go to the next system and see if there's something there. I go into the next system. There's a couple of stations in there. I dock up. No agents. I can't see them because I don't have standing.
Right.
And I'm like, well, okay. Isn't that special? And I go back to the gate to go back to the system where I have the exit marked back out the high sec. I can't go through the gate.
Oh, jeez.
It was a one-way gate trip. Yes.
Oh.
Now, here's the fun part. I went through another gate while I was in there, and I was able to go back and forth between two other systems. It's a standings thing. I guess I popped into a system originally that I wouldn't have access to because of standings. And then when I left it, I couldn't go back into it. So if I had left my explorer, my ship with scanners on it there, and gone in through it with my pod, just I would have been stuck. Yeah. So there you go. I just thought you might find that interesting.
That is, I agree. That is interesting.
Now here's the fun part. It was actually really easy to find an exit gate back to HiSec.
Okay.
So each system I was in, I found like a HiSec exit. So apparently they're really big on having those exits back out there. And the very last thing that I have that you really need to know about this, if you decide to go in there, is that when you find a Potchfin gate and it's a wormhole, when you find the Potchfin wormhole, whether you're in HiSec, LowSec, NullSec, or in Potchfin space, when you initially warp to it, you're going to warp about 70 kilometers off of the actual wormhole. And there's a strong possibility it will be guarded by the Triggs or the Edencom faction. You're probably neutral to Edencom, so they won't shoot you. If you see them and their ships are white instead of red, mm-hmm. they're not going to aggress you. Don't shoot them. Don't attack anything that they're attacking, because then they might shoot you. But it had Potchfin Space has faction wars between Edencom and the Triggs still. If they're fighting each other, you can make a lot of money off the wrecks in there,
mm-hmm.
off salvaging them and looting them. But if you are red to the Triglavians, they will attack you. If you are not red to them and you attack something that they're attacking, they may attack you. And mm-hmm. if you fight them, you ruin your standing with them pretty quickly. However, it's not dead space. So when you land there, if you can cloak and you're cloakied, you're good. You can like slow roll your ass over to the gate and go to the wormhole and go through it. On the other hand, and it's just wormholes, not the gates. The gates you can go right to zero on.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the issue with that is they're not dead space. So if you know you're going to warp to that wormhole for the first time, you can warp to it at 100, and you'll drop it more than like warping distance for local. And once you land, you can then warp from where you landed, as long as you're more than 150 kilometers away from there, right to the wormhole and go in it.
Mm-hmm.
So just thought I'd throw that out there for you.
Okay, cool.
Couple things you need to know. And this is why you might want to skill up the Tech 2 ships for exploration, because I was very happy that when I did it, I was in a cloaky boat. Because several of those gates and wormholes, when I was going to them, through them, etc., they did have red NPCs. And I do not have my standing up on that particular character enough to not get shot by the Triggs.
Right.
And they are dangerous. So, okay. I just thought that you would find that maybe amusing and or helpful.
Yes, definitely helpful.
And on a side note to the side note there, haven't gotten a thing to try the camera out yet, mm-hmm. but Erica picked up the memory uh-huh. from Alliance
mm-hmm.
on the way home from work today, and she gave it to me like, 15 minutes ago.
Okay.
So, yeah. She didn't mention it until like 15 minutes ago. Hell, by the way,
I did pick up the memory for you.
Yeah, I'm not going to tear that apart tonight.
No, understood.
But that's something mm-hmm. that'll be nice to work on.
Thanks for the update. I was going to ask about that later.
Yeah, so it's here. I don't know if it works yet, but we'll find out like in a day or two.
Yep.
All depends on how much the kids frustrate me tomorrow.
Understood. Is some internet still good for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's still good. As a matter of fact, right this very moment, the machine I'm connected to is the only machine on it. Because they haven't figured it out yet. to like try and use it. So, yay.
Yeah. Why do you have internet, Dad?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it might be that there's a slim possibility that either this coming paycheck or the paycheck afterwards we'll be able to turn on the other old internet that I've been complaining about not having for a while. And if she actually does that and is consistent with keeping it up, I'm very, very happy, and we can do some Eve podcasting and some like WoW podcasting.
Yeah. And actually, I'm sure, and something for her, which is it'll keep the kids happy.
So. Oh hell no! Well, they need to clean out the space where I can put up their machine downstairs.
No, understood.
You know, I mean, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah,
right,
let's leave that one go for the moment.
Yeah, it's like they're kind of, they've been stuck with mommy's phone fighting over for a long time. But they could have a nice little setup in the living room downstairs if they just cleared that area out. I just, oh my gosh. So, meanwhile, other topics, you were going to talk about your potential client experience.
Yes.
Like, what would you have done differently?
Yes. Especially, okay. I was going to bring up a topic, which for those of you who are not, haven't played SWB Online, might be, well, some of you have played SWB Online, might be interested in this. Some people who are not interested in SWB or gaming in general when it comes to electronically might be, or might not be interested. I was him and Hong about the subject, but yeah, you know, I think I'm gonna go forward with it, which is the topic that I want to select for tonight was actually, what would I do if I could redo it now? Because here's the thing. This is one of those catch 22 situations that when I first worked on the client, in other words, in this case, when I started working on the client back in the day, I took what was pretty much open source. I tried to contact the original developer to make sure I could use the software, but he never replied. I forget whether it was never replied or the email bounced, whatever, for the code that I found. And I went, okay, I use this as the basis for the client because it was in Java and I knew Java, so I did everything in Java and built it up based originally on his architecture, and I got modified, you know, onward and forward from there to had certain functionalities, but some of the core functionality was there. The one thing that was originally in the client that was for this person was that it was originally developed to be, from the looks of it, it was kind of an offline kind of deal. It was never meant to be online. It didn't have any functionality when it comes to sending message between multiple clients over the internet. It had no clue about how to do that.
Roughly what year was that?
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
Was it still living in Harrisburg at the time?
Oh, yeah. You were still living in Harrisburg. This was your first house in Harrisburg.
Yeah.
Possibly even before.
So we're talking 2000s?
Yeah. It was in the 2000s. I really would have to check because it's been a while. The thing is, I don't even remember.
Well, I moved in Harrisburg in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Into that house in Harrisburg in the late 90s. Moved out in 2006.
Yeah, because I remember talking to Steve Cole about the client and what we were doing. And then we had a big misunderstanding because of he thought what I was doing with the client was basically what he first saw with the client, which was back in the day with Greg Dykhouse, had developed the client using Visual Basic. And he had a communication mechanism based on IRC and a modified version of the IRC server and so forth, which interesting. I kept that working for a while, so I found my own version that I preferred better, and it was based on Java, so I didn't have to worry about it crashing. Because every once in a while that IRC server would crash, and then we had the whole idea of we had to do a different version. I think actually the one IRC server it was originally built on got desupported. It no longer was supported, so I had to migrate to a different IRC server and modify that source code. Lots of fun stuff. Because the thing is, the original IRC servers, they were rate limited. So you only could send so many messages to it for a certain period of time before it would go, nope. And it would, I forget if it would drop you or what, because this that's part of a normal IRC server. And that's one thing I didn't want. So I actually grabbed the Java version, which was written. It had some basic, it didn't have all the functionality of IRC. It still doesn't. But it's fine. I've in my mind, I've changed the focus because there's other Java-based IRC servers that are out there that are more well-written. The focus on the IRC server that I currently use is simple, has the basics, but it's expandable. You can extend it. You can create your own commands, your own returns, status codes, all that kind of stuff. You can customize for that, and it's currently out there. It's still available, open source. You know, when it comes to that, I have a separate module which I can add on for my own custom stuff, so it's not part of the original code base. But anyhow, this comes down to this is back in the day, this is before the whole idea of this was pre-web 2.0. Doug, you know what Web 2.0 is?
Vaguely.
Okay. Okay. Actually, I probably...
You may explain for the audience because...
Yeah, I know. I just realized I had to explain that anyway. The one... Yeah. When it comes to the web, originally the web was a very simple website. You know, you could do very simple things. For example, for anybody who's going on for SAP Online, you'll see that, you know, you can sign up for an account. That signing up for account is very web 1.0, that you enter things into a form, you click submit, send that information.
Oh God, I'm starting to have flashbacks to my college days.
Yeah, back to the server, and then the server then sends back to the browser, basically a web page. And then you move on, and you would go back and forth like this. This is Web 1.0. Web 2.0, which was basically, at least in my mind, I'm not sure if this is truly the case, but in my mind was created by Google. They realized how powerful JavaScript could be, and then you actually, within JavaScript, even though it has very limitation, the very biggest limitation about JavaScript and the browser is that there's only one thread. You send a request, and then you can't. There, it's not synchronous where you actually can wait. It's asynchronous.
Yeah, it's basically you're essentially kind of talking about a shift in eras,
right? So, what that allowed for is actually you go to a web page, and then the web page would actually update while you were there. Without clicking a submit button or anything like that, it would be communicating with the servers, and then it would update the web page based on the information that it got from the server. So that was the big change, the Web 2.0. But Web 2.0, actually, let me see if I can Wikipedia. Going to Wikipedia. The term was coined in 1999, but later popularized in 2004. That tells you how long ago that has been the case.
Oh yeah,
But
it's been a while.
yeah, and obviously the biggest thing when it comes to Web 2.0, the most obvious example of it was Google Maps, because it allows you to do one thing which was really incredible to people, which would it allowed you to click on an image inside a browser window, drag it, let go, and then for the portions that it had not already downloaded into the browser, it would then go request that portion of the map from the back end and then render it into the browser. Actually, what point to why did not service until 2002? Companies such as Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, and Google made it easy to connect, engage in online transactions. At one point, to introduce new features such as multimedia content and interactive web applications, which mainly consist of two-dimensional screens. Which is fine, and Lord knows, don't talk about Web 3.0. I think it's a scam, but that's just me.
It's basically when we transition from the BBS to the not BBS.
Yeah. Phew. Well,
Oh, I'm still remembering those
I'm
days.
back in
When
my
you had to go in
day.
and you had to scroll through the file systems yourself,
I know.
and you didn't know the file system setup or the names of the file systems to look for, you weren't finding nothing there, mister. You had to find that directory all by yourself. Oh my.
Damn cat.
I feel old.
Well, don't mind me. I'm looking at one cat. He had a massive thing, patch of skin which got tore off the back of his head by my other cat. Yeah, it was like,
Yeah,
oh,
cats being assholes.
side of like a nickel. Kind
Wow,
of
that's a nice chunk.
they play a little rough.
Yeah, it'd be like somebody taking a watermelon-sized chunk of skin out of you. Or grapefruit-sized, I guess.
So I know he gets now the new has a new scab, which is pretty deep, so I'm probably gonna have to go get the antiseptic and start spraying them again. Annoying. But anyhow, sorry, get back to the topic at hand. So when I first introduced a client, Web 2.0 did not exist. Or if it did exist, it was in the nascent form. You have to be a really good JavaScript and a good, really good web browser developer to understand and know how to do things. So that was definitely not possible, at least at that moment in time. So if it's one of those so many things that happened in my life where we seem to be, and I see so many things, whether it is in the businesses that I'm working at, or the products that come out from other vendors, like Microsoft. Microsoft had something which was called the Duo. I think it was the Duo, which was ahead of its time. Oh no, it was Courier, the Courier, which was ahead of its time. It was two screens which then would interact, and it was a really cool idea. Problem is, the biggest problem I always find with Microsoft is Microsoft is they're not patient when it comes to creating a product. They want to be product now. They want to show it off now. Instead of trying to introduce the product parts of the product and slowly build up and the knowledge of how that product works, interacts with people, and how and introducing that to people so that, hey, you can do this, and then we can do this, and we do this, and slowly bringing their customers along. Stop having they want to have the big bang and move immediately. It's like, no, you got to do this slowly. But anyway, so when I so that's why I say that, I say about that, which I you know if I when I originally did the client, there was no way I could have done this on the web. Today, though, if I was to start over from scratch, how would I do it? Well, what I probably would do is have it more, well, definitely I moved towards some of this with the client, which is moving it so that's more server based. That's good and bad. Because see that the one of the benefits of doing the client the way I originally had it done, and this is back in the day, before I added a lot of the functionality so it actually syncs with the server, and the server then knows enough about things to then send it to different clients instead of basically each person having their own set of data, and every single time someone entered a room, they'd have to resend the data to everybody so that they could then get the updates. In other words, it would, with a person playing, every single time someone would log in, go into the room, they'd have to send all this data. And if you had a very slow connection, because remember back in those days, there was no such thing as broadband.
Well, that's when it was just starting to hit.
And
I got broadband at the house in Harrisburg in the early 2000s.
understood. The thing is, I was still dealing with people who didn't have that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, and actually, that's why at one point, I think I
Well, you
remember.
built the thing for a dial-up setup too, right?
Yep, it was originally it was to develop for a dial-up internet. And
Again, if you're listening to this and you feel old, thank Paul.
you're
Thank you, Paul.
welcome. And originally, actually, to the point where I actually had at one point, I've removed it from the client now. But originally, one thing not originally, but I added onto the client for those people is I actually added a number. So it could actually tell you how much you're when it comes to the queue of you sending data, how much is still waiting to be sent. This tells you how much, and you needed to do that for that the original architecture, which was everyone had their own copy. And that's why, now it's a little more server based, but if I was starting now, I would start it with server based versus trying to have a peerless, kind of a peerless operation when it comes to people playing. Now, the great thing about peerless is that you don't have to worry about servers. This was the one of those big things back in the day, which was we're trying to move away from client server architecture, the mainframes, where you had a little client PC or terminal, originally terminal, talking to a big massive machine, which is basically the mainframe. And so the whole idea was we wanted to get away from that. We don't want everything to be
Well,
centralized. Now,
I hate to throw this out there, Paul,
I'm
but I'm
sure.
going to.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're going
And I
to.
want to throw it out there while it's on my mind so I don't forget it. But I have a feeling that you might, if you were to redo it again, you might want to reconsider that and go with a what is old is new again thing. Because the problem with the server thing is kind of a necessity issue. For what you're trying to do, you don't really need it. And one of the big things about what you're doing with the purpose of this thing, which is to have same interface for two people in different places, but they have their own sets of information. The problem that I see is that to do that, then you need a dedicated server space for it. And to actually do the thing you're trying to do, you don't really need that. And basically, you could still have people independently doing the game without necessarily being tied down to a server space. And that keeps you from having the potential of being held hostage by a server service of some kind. If that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it definitely makes sense. The biggest issue for that kind of thing is the interconnectivity between the different servers. Let's just say different clients that are running within your different different computers. Because the problem is that one of the things that using a server solves is network routing. How do you get your packet from your machine to the machine over, that's in the next state? How do you do it?
Well, yeah, but that's just a matter of you're having an ISP, each person having their own ISP, which they have to have to connect to the internet anyways.
No. You're missing.
Well, I mean, they don't. You can connect through, whatever connection you can find, but they don't necessarily have to, they don't have to have their own account. Like, they could be, I will be about 10 seconds or so. Cat wants out.
Ah.
And I'm not going to hold her up from getting to little litter box. I'll be right back.
Oh, understood. Ah. Hi, Omaha.
Okay, back. IR back.
Yeah, understood. See that?
I mean, there's so many ways to connect to the internet. It's not funny.
Right. Yeah. Getting access to the internet, that's simple. Because you're making a connection from your machine to an internet-based server or machine. So the data must has to be able to flow that one way. Now, flowing backwards is the difficult part. Having it so something out there on the internet can connect to your machine. That's the more difficult part. Because of it's not the internet the way the internet architecture currently is set up, where you have NAT gateways and things like that, especially NAT gateways, they're not designed to send a packet from outside to inside. The only way that happens is when you use like a what's called a TCP connection that connects to a server. The packets come back because the NAT gateway knows that that packet came from a connection that was already outbound. So that's an inbound packet that belongs to that outbound connection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Ajeba. Actually, guy on Twitch. I'll just let you know, yeah, actually there are other services that are not AWS and not Azure. From Vultr, VULTR. I have some servers there. DigitalOcean, another one, has really, yeah. Really.
Well, see, I was thinking of back in the days when you could buy a computer game, mm-hmm. and you could directly connect to another person's machine.
Mm-hmm. You can easily do that when it comes to a LAN because the LAN was open.
Right, but you could do it like literally over the internet. Like you could play Talonsoft games, and like you could play the Battle of Gettysburg, and if you had the information with your friend in another state, you could theoretically have a game with them machine to machine direct. Mm-hmm. I thought that's how you had this set up, where I thought that you were doing this where you had the two people have the game on their thing and they just connect directly and it's machine to machine and not necessarily through a server.
No, it goes to the server. But back in the day, when I first created SMB Online, it was a dumb server. Basically, it was a router for messages. That's all it was. It stored no state about the board. That was one of those issues that we ran into, which was state of the board. That was a shared thing. And getting it so that shared state was consistent. The main shared state that was the most difficult part about it, that anyone who was on SMB Online earlier in the early days remembers this. Which is every once in a while, you get a new person come in, and what the current impulse was, because it's a shared state between everybody, every person that was playing would send that shared state to everybody else. So, yeah, exactly. So the question is, who has the ultimate truth in that? Nobody. And that was one of those issues where that was one thing that definitely got solved when they made it to be server based. That that the board state was no longer saved in pieces over the different clients, but was stored on the server. So that when someone came in the room, the server would go, "Hey, this is the current state of the board." And then the person could then download the state of the board and without bothering everybody else. Which also, the one thing that also did, which was innumerably better for those people with lesser connection. Yeah, port forwarding's dangerous.
I open my machine up to anybody on the internet. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Exactly. That's like UPnP. Wonderful protocol. Freaking hell. Dangerous. Oh, get out. Because that's the whole idea of a UPnP. That protocol is that it will automatically open an inbound port. Dangerous. It's dangerous. It's this. The whole idea of UPnP was to have it so that it simplifies things for the players, so they don't have to know okay what exactly you have to open up and to locations. If you want to limit it to only a certain IP address space, you don't have to know that. Well, the problem with that is that it then you go have any program go to UPnP and go, "Hey, you need to open up this port so that the connection can come back and reach the computer that I'm running on. What could possibly go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like, so what were you thinking about doing differently?
Okay. Doing differently.
Like, were you thinking in terms of that kind of architecture stuff, or are you thinking in terms of, like, the client itself?
Well, both. One, it would be a lot more of the rules, you know. Okay. When it comes to the client helps you play the game of SFB. It does not implement hard implement the rules. It's designed to be a tool to help you to play the game properly according to the rules, but it does not enforce those rules because of, and I found this out the hard way, where I did the Federation Commander, where I tried my best to enforce the rules on that side of the fence. And that invariably, I definitely mentioned this before, which is the biggest issue there is that if you get them wrong, people can't play. So they need an escape, a way to escape that and correct it so they continue to play and enjoying the game. So, you know,
the way I see it, the rules of SFB are essentially such a spaghetti string of code for you that not necessarily an impossible task, but
all the rules. Yeah,
you would have to pay me a six-figure full-time salary to even think about starting to sit down and make that whole thing work.
Yep, exactly. But I think it's a lot more of that stuff could then be put on the server. A lot of more of the logic could be put on the server because the great thing about that is that you could do everything in the browser. If you want to, you can use a browser, you can use a client and have it so that client actually shows that information in a different way. You know, it would be, in my mind, a lot easier if basically the client, whether it is a browser or an app, was basically just a viewer for what the information was. And because currently that's not quite the case. It has a lot of the rules, a lot of that stuff is implemented there. Obviously, some of the stuff would have to be custom coded, which is, you know, when it comes to impulses, when it comes to how to do the interactions. Still, you need to do a lot of that stuff client side, whether it's in the browser or it's in an application itself. Because that's one of the big things that I would actually want to do, which is if I did it now, I would probably I would have to think about it because I'm thinking about, I probably want to do it as a browser, but what I have to investigate this. But if there was a good enough engine when it comes to, you know, doing hex-based games and have the ability to connect or make it easy enough to create a module to connect to a server to send the information back and forth. Because I know, I'm pretty sure it's Unity. The Unity engine allows you to create a application for Android or iOS, or actually also you can do it for the browser. At least this is many years, so I'm pretty sure that was the case, and I'm assuming it's still the case. Don't know. Actually, I don't know if it's still the case or not. But the whole idea of letting some other engine take care of the rendering and things like that, versus doing everything by hand the way I did it, and so I could build off somebody else's engine versus doing everything by myself.
Right.
Because I yes.
What about like researching to see if there's an open source engine you can use? I mean, I know Unity you can access and use, but
Right. Or real
I'm
engine.
thinking more like say for instance, if there is somebody else already going down this road for you, and that's what you're looking for, is there an existing one
Yeah.
that could do an open source map hex based?
Understood. Yeah, that's one thing I've
Because I
my
mean, it sounds like you've developed your own engine.
Yeah, basically.
And it works.
Oh yeah, works quite well, and people like it, and I'm doing my best to improve it, especially when it comes to, big surprise, fleet operations, and making sure that it works well in that scenario, because that seems to be a place where it's really needed at the moment, because of the tournaments are fewer and far between than it was previously. It was designed to play tournament games. That was
Right.
the original intent. Then Greg Dykhouse created the SOP Online, is that it allowed Greg Dykhouse and some of his friends, like Bill
To connect.
Scheller, some of the rated aces,
Back in the
to
day.
back in the day, to actually be able to play games online against each other.
Oh yeah, 'cause even back then it was the game's kind of a hard sell for your local hobby shop crowd. So it's like the one percenters of the one percenters.
Yeah, actually, back then, the thing is, it wasn't, in my mind, I don't think it was the problem with with groups as much, though, obviously they were still pretty small. But the level of competition, because Greg and his friends, they had a higher level of competition than some of the other players that they knew locally, probably would be my guess. So, but the way it seems to me, it seems like it's going, is that it's more and more of the gameplay is fleets, and making sure that the client works well with that is good. Actually, I know that someone's doing something which I've not seen people do in the past, for since Aaron stopped playing. Or at least
Parents
run
daily.
Aaron Staley, running campaigns. And that is, Frank is actually using the campaign room as part of the client.
Nice.
So it's like, cool. In fact, I had a feature for him because of the. No, we're. Let's see. There's. Yeah, Federation Commander is a rare thing that people play on SOB Online.
It's a smaller group, it's a
And by
smaller subset.
much smaller group, yeah. And actually, we did have tournaments going many, many, many years ago. I don't remember the last one we had. I actually had to go to the PHP, bulletin board. Totally different format. If you want to go back to SCP Online and go back searching
No, no, no.
through that,
Nope, I'm okay. I'm fine.
But
I have enough things sucking my time up right now.
Most people play SFB online. Of course, to be honest, I've not actually checked to see what people do these days. And I have to make sure about FedCon, because I'm pretty sure I did this, but I have to double check to make sure that when you log, did I get rid of that? Which was the whole idea of the which was that FedCon was a separate server. Let me just look at this. Yeah. It's an online server, and then, oh no, okay, it still has a FedCom online. Okay, so it would actually bring up, I think, a separate room. Yeah, you
I
go
wonder
if
if
you.
anybody listening to this would be willing to come out and run FedCom, like small scenarios to like teach people how to play.
Also, your TSB. I've got to change that. That's one of those things. That's one of those things that I think I made a mistake,
What's that?
which was actually separating SFB Online and FedCom Online when it comes to the initial room that you join in. So that right now I went into FC Online, and FC Online, you see FC chat meeting place is the default meeting area. Now, here's the one thing, and that's why I really should get rid of that, which is that if you can go with into the SFB, quote unquote, SFB Online server and play FedCom Online. So play Federation Commander. It's the same server. It's just that there's different meeting places on that same server. Which is one of those things I wanted to do a while back, and actually even change it for SFB. So it's no longer called SFB Bullpen. But actually it's just, I don't know, some other name for that room. So, that's one of those things. Now there's campaign rooms. For the most part, the campaign rooms are mainly, well, back in the day, if you're taking me down this road, I'm going that way. Back in the day, Aaron Staley had this grand idea, which is you have the master, you have the SFB campaign room. And then from the SFB campaign room, that's where you actually could see what the campaign is. You have the different territory and all that kind of thing, where where you had all the planets and all that kind of thing, and so forth. And then people could actually submit orders. I got created so you actually could submit orders in the SFB campaign room. So you can say, okay, this is where I'm moving from here, 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 here. You save that off, and then you do, the idea was that you would submit it to the GM, and then GM would then move those pieces for that game. So,
Okay. Kind of like Warlord.
The one thing that I like about Warlord that I don't like about the SFB campaign room and most campaigns is that when it comes to Warlord, it is information based in that you don't know what's in the case of Starfleet Warlord, next sector over. Next
Right.
16 by 16
You have to be able to
sector.
see it. You have to have something there to see it.
Right. You have to go in. You have to do a scan and so forth to actually see what is there. And always the gotcha. The gotcha with Starfleet Warlord is this. And that is that You gotta blindly move a ship from one sector to the next sector. Problem. Since it's blind, you could run into a hex where basically it destroys your ship. Go move, boom. Like
I think it's kind of wrong, given the universe and how easy it is to like evade. So, and like not engage.
And that's one of the things I definitely, again, I like about the Starfleet Warlord, which is it's all asynchronous. You put in your orders, I process the orders, but you can't say I'm moving here. Run through the engine goes, okay, you move here. Oh, guess what? You ran into there's already a person in that hex. Well, the question is, do you fight it out, or do you bounce? You have a certain condition that says, okay, if my strength is only like if it's 80% bounce, or if it's 100% bounce, I always want to be at the advantage. That kind of thing where you can be very cautious if you want to. But also remember, one thing about combat in Warlord is that it's random. In theory, an inferior force can beat a superior force just by sheer luck.
Oh, yeah.
Now, obviously, when it comes to that, there's a limitation on that. If you're only half the size of your opponent, you got a very little chance you're actually going to win. But if you're like 75% of the opposing force, you got a chance. You got a shot. So yeah, gotta go down that rabbit hole. But actually, that's another thing which I need to get back to work on, which actually is Starfleet Warlord and automating it, because Lord knows I ran into it an issue 2 or 3 months ago, where I did a boo-boo. I did a boo-boo. I accidentally, because each person's turn, you have a certain order with players run their turn, that I run the player's turns. One time I missed a player's turn. I forgot to process it in the proper order. The problem is that order matters, especially when it comes to different. If you have two people that are ganging up on a third, and they know when that person's supposed to move, they can plan to have it so that they can stop. They can basically destroy a player if they know the timing, whether that. And it comes to two players, if that third is between like the first and the second guy, or it's between the second and the first, because of if it's after the second guy, so you get to the guy they're attacking goes after the last guy that is in the order sheet, then that person can do a preparation move to stop the guy, and then the guy that actually runs the turn orders first, then he can actually kill the guy. That kind of a crazy thing. And I don't want that to happen again, because what I actually had to do was I had to restart the game. I reset lots of things, change people's locations and all that kind of thing. Change the order of that they were run, and so forth. And I don't want to do that again, because part of that also I had to, for like a month, I had to give people free turns because of I screwed up. And if I let it go, it would have been screwed up the game for everybody. So I had to give basically free turns. So a lot of money went down the tubes. So if I can automate it so that it'll automatically run those turns, and then And so I make sure the turns get run in their proper order every single time. I then will not have an issue. The only one thing that I have to figure, I have to, there's one thing I have to do, which is I have to create a program which actually will give me a status of their person's finances because of invariably, I think that's currently what I do is I check, I keep an eye on people's person's finances on whether, okay, if they are starting to run in the negative for their account, a lot of times I'm lenient. I let them go as a negative for a few bit, for a few turns. But to the point where I say, I got to cut you off, man. Either you pay up and you get your account straight, or I'm gonna have to cut you off, man. I gotta cut you off from your fix, from your Starfleet Warlord fix. And that can be quite exciting and addictive to play the game. So anyhow, I think I will wrap it up there with discussions of Starfleet Warlord and going that way, because that's one thing that where I'm still working on a guide that to make it more web-based. And actually, that's one thing I want to do a little more work on. I have a simple web-based client for Warlord, which doesn't do everything that like the actual application does itself, but there are certain issues. And that's one thing I also have not done, which I really need to do, which is take the I had a way back, man, it was like 6 months ago now. I had a survey which I put out for Starfleet Warlord and said, okay, what would you want to do when it comes to this, this, and this? I looked at the result and went, doesn't surprise me. But and some of it was like, okay, people actually would like to have it so instead of sending things via email, they can upload it to the web server. Their turns, which obviously the big issue there is I have to make sure they have an account and log in so that I don't just get random people uploading crap up to my server and then my server running out of space and then it just crashes. That kind of fun stuff that some malicious person would do just for kicks. Anyhow, Doug, it's been delightful talking with you. Is there anything you want to mention?
Yeah, Gamers of Summer's coming up, and you still owe me a schedule.
I know.
Him. Schedule, please. You can't really see it because I don't have a camera set up right now, but I'm doing the thing with my hand out and my finger, like in that picture, going,
Yeah.
put
Oh,
the thing in my hand.
reminds me.
Yeah.
I dropped off the poster to the local game store.
Yay!
So
Thank you.
they said they'd put it up. I will check back with them next week to make sure that
Cool.
they actually put it up.
Yeah.
Can I ask them, okay, can you put this up or have me or give me a place where I can put it up?
Did I give you the one to cut up to?
Yes, you gave me the three different types.
Okay.
You gave me the one which
Yay.
was the old kind of silhouette thing with, and then another one which was more color.
Did they
And
pick from the three, or did you say, here's one?
I just here's one. I gave him the color one because I figured to me that was the one that looked the best. So I figured
Okay.
that one would get the most attention. So
Okay. Thank you.
as I said, I'll stop back with them next week to make sure that they actually post it up somewhere in the shop. So yeah, because he said he would. So it's like okay, well, you said you would, so I'm taking your word at it. So please put it up. So okay, so Gamers of Summer is coming up. Oh crap. Da-da-da.
What's that?
Nothing. Just banning a guy.
It's not me, is it?
On Twitch.
Oh, okay. Whew. I feel much better then.
Don't
Yeah, I
guess.
made another day without getting banned from something. Hooray!
Yay!
Not all of my goals are like, a high bar.
Well,
So. You know, I thought
No,
I had something else to
actually,
say, but I can't think of it now.
Doug was recommending running a FedCon tournament at the convention. I would love that.
There was that. I mean, it's
Yeah.
a FedCom event.
Yeah.
Have somebody, just talk to these different groups and people and say, hey, does anybody want to like teach how to play Federation Commander? Federation and Empire. There's a group of people that would love our convention if they happen to have that 3-day weekend open, because we can give them the space and it's a nice venue for it. Yada, yada, yada. And they can leave their stuff set up overnight.
Yes, they can.
So there's that.
Okay. Well, with
I'm sure I'll think
that,
of it like when I'm going to sleep tonight.
yeah, I'm sure you will. Well, talking about that, you have a good night.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having
You're
me on again.
welcome. Okay. So, a little discussion about what I would do differently when it comes to the online client, versus what it currently is. Obviously, to redo it would take a lot of time, and unfortunately, I can't make this my main gig. There are sometimes I would really like to make it my full-time gig, just because of it would give me the time to actually enhance the product, enhance the client much more. And build the business, build it as a true business, not just a side hustle, which would be great. And obviously talk to, at the beginning, of course, anyone who likes EVE Online, there's a good tip right there. And finally, of course, Starfleet Warlord, for those of you, those the few far the lucky to play as part of a Starfleet Warlord, tip the hat for you. That's one of the things I have to do. I have to add the ability to create an account on that server. Yikes! When I moved, I lost that ability because I forgot to add it. So anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night. Okay. That's let me do is this, and for all. And okay. Done, done, done. Cool. All good, all good. Kitties to the left of me, kitties to the right of me.
Aw. Kitty, kitty, kitty.
Yeah. I gotta find where the. I think I know where the one kitten went. I just gotta find them, and also see if I can grab the one black cat, which has that, now has a nice scab in the back and looks like, I can, some of the fur is gone, so gotta start spraying them again. Cause that also the great thing about using the antiseptic, the other cat won't chew on that ear. Cause it tastes nasty. Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, I want to make sure that you knew that. Actually, I had some time today, so I stopped by the place and dropped off the one of the posters. So it kind of as soon as I that's what, and obviously one of the things why I want to go back also is one of the mixture to put it up. And after you put it up, I know you want me to take a picture of it. So.
Yeah, that, and you can throw it up in the thing. Maybe
I'm
somebody
on
else
my
will get that in their head to go do it.
Oh.
Ah.
Okay.
And the other kitten is laying on the couch, so when you come upstairs, just bring kittens.
Okay.
That's aww.
Cool. Okay, found them. I have a little kind of box near my other computer.
Aww.
That is perfect for a kitten. And the kitten went,
aww.
I like this spot.
Aww.
That's good. Okay, well, I got say goodbye.
All right, well,
and, yes.
I'll talk to you next week, I guess.
Yep, definitely.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, welcome. Okay.